This podcast is a review of the final examination given to Section 2 in contracts law for the 2007-2008 academic year. Question 1 concerned the relationship between Harvey homeowner and a contractor that Harvey hired to redo a bathroom for him. The contractor's name was Better Baths. The controversy arose because of the location of a electric switch, which inconsistent with the drawings that Harvey homeowner had approved as part of its contract with Better Baths. The switch was about 18 inches away from the position that it was supposed to occupy on the wall. Harvey objected to it. Better Baths had explained to him that the problem was that they had run into some difficulty with the existing wiring, that there was an electric box at that exact location, and that either they would have to cover it with a blank plate under the electrical code, or they could put a switch there. So they decided to put the switch there that they realized had belonged 18 inches away from that perspective. Harvey was not satisfied, or says he was not satisfied with that response, and says, well, I don't think that you've performed adequately. Paragraph 3 of our agreement said that I will pay you 25% of the contract price on the completion of the rough plumbing and wiring. You say you've reached that point, but paragraph 3 goes on to say that all payments are conditioned upon the satisfaction of the owner with the work completed, and I, Harvey, homeowner, am not satisfied with the way in which the rough wiring was done because of the location of the switch. And Better Baths says, in effect, if you won't pay me the $10,000 progress payment that I'm supposed to get pursuant to paragraph 3, I am not going to go ahead and continue working on your job. Harvey has come to us with this problem and wants to know what his legal position is, what his rights and liabilities may be in relationship to Better Baths. He also confronts another problem, and that is the plumber, about whose work Harvey has no complaints. But the plumber said, I'm going to sue you unless you pay me what I am entitled to for the work that I have done. And there, too, Harvey has asked our advice about his rights and liabilities in relationship to Paul Plummer, the plumbing subcontractor. Let's take up first the, because it's the harder and lengthier problem to discuss, the relationship between Harvey homeowner and Better Baths. We're going to argue for Harvey, of course, that that language, all payments are conditioned upon the satisfaction of the owner with the work completed, is an express condition, and that it is the character of express conditions that unless they are perfectly satisfied, there is no obligation on the part of Harvey homeowner to make that $10,000 progress payment that would otherwise be required by paragraph 3. Harvey wants to amplify his position and his understanding of the clause by referring to some discussions that he had had with the Steve Sales, who is the salesperson and also a designer for Better Baths. During the course of their discussion prior to the time the contract was signed, Steve had told Harvey homeowner that they took a great deal of pride in delivering bathrooms that homeowners loved. They never left a job until the homeowner for whom the job was done felt really happy. And he went on and told some stories about how Better Baths had actually sometimes made major changes where they became necessary during construction to make the homeowner happy. And they had not even increased their charges. They were so desirous of satisfying the customer. Now, that language, Harvey thinks, will assist him in making the point he needs to make about the express condition of satisfaction. And that is, as between these parties, the express condition of satisfaction clearly referred to a subjective satisfaction on the part of the owner. not to be interpreted as meaning that it was reasonable to be dissatisfied, but simply that he was honestly dissatisfied, that he had arrived at that conclusion of dissatisfaction in good faith. There's going to be objection to the introduction of that testimony. This was, after all, not only was it a written contract, but it also had paragraph 9 in it, which is a merger clause you recognized, I'm sure, and it suggested that no prior discussions, no prior negotiations, agreements, and understandings could be introduced. The position of Better Baths will be that the only reasonable reading of that clause is to suggest that it is an agreement which is completely integrated, to use the language of the parole evidence rule, rather than one that is partially integrated. Harvey will argue that the court ought not to decide whether it's completely integrated or not without at least preliminarily hearing what was said. Harvey's going to argue that the discussions touch on matters which are not within the agreement, but nevertheless were quite material in his willingness to enter the agreement, and that under those circumstances, the court should decide that this was a partially integrated agreement and not a completely integrated agreement. Better Baths obviously will respond to that by saying that the merger clause should be given effect. It's perfectly clear on its face, and that the agreement, in fact, is highly detailed. And with respect to all the questions that Harvey wants to introduce, that they not only are well within the subject matter of the agreement, and therefore, since it's a fully integrated agreement, it would be inappropriate to entertain them. But also, they're going to argue that there is inherently some contradiction and inconsistency between what it is that the Harvey homeowner wants to introduce testimony about. For example, they will argue specifically that the notion that they would do something other than was called for in the contract, which would be far more expensive than the work called for in the contract, and that they would do that without increasing their price, is contradictory to the agreement, which specifies not only what should be done, but also the price at which it would be done, and that there is therefore an inconsistency between the two. Harvey Homeowner is going to make two different arguments in response to those arguments by Better Baths. In the first place, Harvey is going to say that not only is this partially integrated for reasons that I expressed before, but in addition to that, that there is no contradiction at all, because these are really amplifications of what it is that the parties meant. They are additional promises being made by the parties. And so, to some extent, they clarify what might otherwise be regarded as ambiguities in the agreement, and to the extent that they do not do that, then they supplement but do not contradict the agreement. For example, with respect to the one possible contradiction that the Better Baths points out, Harvey's response will be no. The contract says the price, and the contract says that the owner should be satisfied, needs to be satisfied by the work. And so if you look at it that way, there's certainly no contradiction in saying that there's an undertaking by Better Baths that if it takes more effort than they had originally anticipated to do a job that satisfies the customer, that they regard that as within the contract and therefore part of the contract price. In that way of looking at it, of course, there's no contradiction. Harvey has another argument to make, and that is that that the language that was used by Steve Sales had clearly misled him into thinking that it was worth paying the additional money that he had to pay Better Baths as compared to other contractors, and therefore there was fraud in the inducement to enter the contract. And it's well established under the parole evidence rule that a party is entitled to prove that there was fraud in the inducement to enter the contract, that evidence cannot be prevented, the introduction of that evidence cannot be prevented and should not be prevented by the parole evidence rule. This also, of course, touches on the point I made before, which is that Harvey is going to say that the payments are conditioned upon his subjective satisfaction. There, the Better Baths is going to respond that the this language of satisfaction is well understood, and that in the context of construction contracts, there is no doubt that it should be judged by a reasonable judgment to be made, that the issue is not whether Harvey homeowner is personally satisfied, but rather whether or not a reasonable person would be satisfied the work was done, and that the switch being 18 inches away from the where it shows on the drawing is not so material a deviation that a reasonable person would not have accepted it, particularly with an explanation of why it is that it's 18 inches away. One final argument that the contractor is going to make is that the language of satisfaction should appropriately be regarded as a promise rather than a condition, and that it was a promise which he had substantially performed. A contractor is going to argue that the issue of satisfaction should not be taken independently of the question of what injury Harvey homeowner is claiming and the substantiality of his performance, of the contractor's performance up to this point. The contractor will want to point out, for example, that in matters like this, should it be regarded as a breach to have placed it 18 inches away, that the court is most likely to apply a diminished value rule to the assessment of damages rather than a cost to completion rule, and that looked at in that context, Harvey's refusal to pay the $10,000 in progress payment was really quite unreasonable, since in all probability the difference in the value of the bathroom or of the home as a regard of as a reflection of the 18-inch deviation from the drawing was likely to be negligible in that respect, a lot like the Redding pipe case that we read and discussed at some length in class. Better Baths is also going to want to talk about the reasons why he was unable to place the switch where the switch was originally supposed to be and why it is that it's 18 inches away. And he's going to say, in effect, that performance of the job exactly as specified had become impossible as a result of developments which they had not anticipated, and indeed neither they nor the homeowner, Harvey homeowner, had anticipated, and that is the wiring that was in the house that really could not be seen until the room was gutted and the walls were taken down and they could get a good look at the existing wiring. And it was only then that they realized, or the electrician really had realized, what the problem was and had come up with a solution to that problem. I think that Harvey is going to argue that, first of all, that this is not the kind of problem which has given rise to impossibility. It was perfectly possible for them to put the switch where it was supposed to be. It would simply be more expensive, and the courts have not been sympathetic to the notion that the job is simply more costly than was anticipated. In addition to that, he is going to argue that the expertise hereafter, in this case, belongs with the Better Baths, that they were the ones who bear the allocated risk of making a mistake when they come up with their price for the job. They have to include the unknown and things that they know that they can't know, and certainly that includes wiring that can't be seen until after the room is gutted, after the walls are removed and they can see the wiring. And so either on the ground that it's not an adequate incident to be regarded as producing impossibility or impracticability, coupled with the fact that even if it is, the risk of that kind of event should be allocated to Better Baths. Harvey homeowner believes that he'll prevail on that particular argument. With respect to the argument that the contractor has made that they have substantially performed, Harvey, of course, is going to reiterate not only his argument with respect to the express condition and how it has to be completely met and how it means subjectively satisfied. He's also going to say that this is not an immaterial matter. Where a switch is located in the bathroom is important to the person who uses it. And therefore, the argument that the contractor has made that they've substantially performed should be understood in the context of how much a difference it makes. The liability, or the claim, I should say, asserted by Paul Plummer really raises only a single question, I think, that should have been discussed by persons answering the question. And that is whether or not Paul Plummer is a third party, an intended third party beneficiary of this contract. Some members of the class tried to argue there's an assignment. There's no assignment of this contract. The fact that they are identified as the subcontractors is only in the contract, is only a way of indicating the contractual arrangement that is being made by Better Baths for the accomplishment of the plumbing or the accomplishment of the wiring. And that really the question here is whether or not the contract makes Paul Plummer an intended third-party beneficiary. And here Better Paul Plummer is going to argue, oh yes, of course, that's why my name is there, because I was intended to be the beneficiary of this contract. And I think Harvey Omer is going to persuasively respond, no, 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 you were only an incidental third-party beneficiary. Your name was not there out of a shared desire on my part and a Better Baths part to benefit you in some way, but rather just information that I was being given by Better Baths about who it was who's going to do the plumbing. If you wanted to predict the outcome, by the way, there's no doubt in my mind that Paul Plummer was an incidental and not an intended third-party beneficiary, and therefore is not able to sue Harvey Homeowner on that claim. I would say that of all the answers that I received, the most upsetting to me was the one that applied, and this was true of more than one of you, unfortunately, applied the Uniform Commercial Code, Article 2, to the questions raised in Question 1. This was a construction contract that involves labor and materials. We read many, many construction contract cases. Not a single one was resolved under the Article 2 of the Uniform Commercial Code, because they are simply not transactions in goods. And I was disappointed that that happened. And, of course, more to the point, if you then went ahead and tried to resolve all of the issues solely by reference to the Uniform Commercial Code, you were not really responding to the question that I asked.